A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to France Elects, a special world review podcast series on the French election from the New Statesman. I'm Ido Vok, Europe correspondent at the New Statesman. Over the past few months, I've been joined by some of the sharpest observers of French politics, delving deep into the big issues shaping the race to lead the EU's biggest military power and its second largest economy. On Sunday, the French people voted once again for Emmanuel Macron, making him the first president in 20 years to win re-election, and the first for 50 years to win re-election with a parliamentary majority. But how convincing was his win really, and what might be some of the challenges that he'll face as his second term gets underway? With me to discuss is Megan Gibson, executive editor at Foreign.
Hi, Ido. Big night last night. Again, we're back here again after 2 weeks since the first round. I don't want to gloss over how challenging and tough this election campaign was, but I wanted to kind of start with discussing what a huge victory this was for Macron. A few weeks ago, the polls were looking a little bit shaky, but he basically won with a landslide. What was your take on last night?
So Macron won with 58%, which is 8 points less than last time when he won against Le Pen with 66%. But it's clearly a more convincing majority than a quote-unquote normal second round where the winner might win with 51 or 52 or 53%. 58% shows that the far right is clearly improving its scores. This is the third time that the far right is through to the second round. And so it was in the teens the first time, it was 36% the second time, and now it's reached over 40%. But it shows that the far right is still very far from being normalized, and it's still very far from being a quote unquote normal party and just another part of the political system. There was clearly a lot of kind of resentful voting for Macron, I think, especially from voters for Jean-Luc Mélenchon, the left winger. But a plurality of them did, in the end, split for Macron, even though reluctantly. Macron's relatively convincing win shows that, in the end, the so-called Republican Front, this idea that voters for mainstream parties unite against the far right in the second round, it's weaker than it's ever been, but it is still there, and the far right is still not completely normalized.
I wanted to kind of ask you your thoughts on that, because yes, the far right, this is the, you know, their best showing in a presidential election. This is the third time Le Pen's won, the best, you know, outcome she's had so far. But this is a much different Le Pen we've seen in 2022 than it was in 2017. I mean, in so many ways, she had to moderate the more radical aspects of her party and her agenda. So for me, it kind of raises the question of whether she's becoming more centrist, but the lengths that the far right now has to go to actually makes itself presentable. I think that kind of maybe muddies the waters of this idea that France is more accepting of the far right and being more radicalized.
So on this, I think the improved numbers that she was seeing in the first round were a function of, first of all, Zemmour, who we've spoken about before, is almost mechanically making her seem more moderate by being more extreme. And so by disavowing his more extreme positions, she was able to seem more moderate. And her choosing on certain issues to moderate her rhetoric, the substance of her moderation was not always there. So on the European Union, she said she no longer wanted to leave the EU, but wanted to transform the EU into an alliance of nations. Now, look, if you want to transform the EU from what it is now into what you call an alliance of nations, that is leaving or at least dismantling the EU as it currently stands. So in the substance, it really was not that different, but she was able to say, I no longer want to leave the EU. And so that gave her a kind of moderation. But I think, to me, the interround period here is quite crucial, because in the campaign for the first round, there was this dynamic where she was able to contrast with Zemmour, and she really didn't receive that much scrutiny on her actual policies, and much of the debate was focused on areas which she had chosen to campaign on and was quite strong on, including the cost of living. But then you get to the second round campaign, and you get these 2 weeks where the choice kind of crystallizes. You know, on Monday morning, do you want to wake up with Macron or Le Pen? If you're a Mélenchon voter, well, your guy's out and you're not going to wake up with him. So you really have to think quite hard, you know, about what it is you want. And in addition to that, there was a lot of scrutiny of Le Pen, not in kind of opposition to Zemmour, but really a scrutiny of her program on its merits and on its own terms. And that was particularly obvious in the debate. I think Macron's tactics in the debate were criticized, his kind of aggressivity was criticized, but it did, I think, highlight to many voters that what Le Pen was proposing on certain issues was actually not that moderate in its substance rather than its form. And also many of them will have seen it as not realistic, as not feasible. And so I think the interround period here is fairly crucial. Just this kind of crystallization of the choice. There are a lot of hypotheticals you can go for before the first round. But once the choice really crystallizes, I think many voters made their peace with the idea of voting for Macron, however reluctantly, to keep out Le Pen.
That's another thing I wanted to ask you about, that this idea of that there was a lot of voters that were kind of holding their nose and voting for Macron. But in these 2 weeks since the first round, was Macron able to kind of push his past successes? Is there anything that he could, you know, really stand up and show to voters and say, this is what I did? Like, who were the passionate Macron supporters that really wanted him to win?
I mean, so you shouldn't really forget that Macron won the first round, and he improved on his first round score last time, which, like the fact of winning overall, is pretty unprecedented in recent history. And he really does have a constituency of voters who are not very engaged. You know, they don't really go to rallies. Every event I've been to of Macron's has not been very big, a few thousand people, but they are people who are really, really convinced by what he's proposing, by his record on the economy especially. They tend to be very convinced pro-Europeans. Some of the people I spoke to talked about the COVID pandemic as showing good leadership on international affairs, all these kinds of things. And he really does. I mean, you know, we can talk about the rejection of Macron a lot, and that's an important part of the story. But another part of the story is that he has a constituency of voters who were very happy to vote for him in the first round and were very happy to vote for him in the second round. And it was not a kind of choice by default to keep someone out, but it was a positive choice. And I think more broadly, Macron in his speech yesterday announced, in his victory speech that I watched in front of the Eiffel Tower in central Paris, in front of this very grand setting, Macron said that he didn't want his next 5 years to represent continuity, but he instead wanted to found a new political project and to do things differently. Now, to what extent that is sincere, and I think that would kind of imply bringing in the left a bit more than he has, in particular because millions of people on the left will have voted for him to keep out Le Pen rather than positively for him, despite some offers that he made on the environment, for example, in particular. Now, to what extent that is sincere and to what extent he's sincere about changing course will be interesting to watch, I think. And one of the indicators will be who he chooses for his government, which allies he chooses for parliamentary elections, whether he tilts to the right or to the left will be a key indicator of that.
You were at this event, as you mentioned, last night. What was the mood? Was it relief? Were people overjoyed? What was it like in Paris last night?
So Macron events tend to be quite small. They're not these kind of massive rallies with tens of thousands of people. There are more journalists than activists there. They're on the cameras, they do a very good job of showing the activists and not the journalists, but I'm pretty sure yesterday there were more, or at least the journalists were competing for the activists in terms of numbers. And so the people who turn up tend to be very, very, very convinced Macron supporters. They talk about his record on the economy, on kind of entrepreneurialism, on Europe, a lot of them. They really like him. Most people I spoke to were convinced since 2017. They had backed him since the beginning. But I think most of them were confident that he was going to win. I spoke to people before the first round, and they were nervous that Le Pen could win, but there was no kind of real doubt that Macron would. But a lot of them were looking ahead to the legislative elections, so the parliamentary elections that are going to take place in about 6 weeks or so, because there's a real question about the allies that Macron will choose and whether he'll be able to get a majority. Now, there's no precedent for a president not getting a majority in legislative elections that are held after the first round. But in the context of an election marked above all, I think perhaps more than any other, by the rejection of both candidates, whether the opposition to Macron can get its act together, both on the far right and the left, there is a chance that this parliamentary election could be different. And that's certainly what people like Le Pen, like Mélenchon, like Zemmour were hoping for. So Zemmour called for cooperation between the nationalist parties, i.e. his Reconquête party and Le Pen's National Rally. Mélenchon will be hoping to lead a kind of unity block of left-wing parties from his France Unbound party to the communists and the socialists. And of course, there's the question of what happens to Macron's essentially centre-right and his centre, with much of the Republicans especially, whether they join him. I mean, many of these factions will be saying that they failed to win because of the squabbling. You know, Mélenchon will say, I lost out on a second round because of the Communist Party's votes. And Le Pen will say that not enough Zemmour voters went for her and so on. Whereas Macron did quite a good job of unifying the centre and indeed the centre-right, and how far these different factions are able to cooperate ahead of the legislative election might indicate whether we'll see an upset from the traditional pattern of the president's party getting a majority.
If you're enjoying France Elects, you might want to consider subscribing. We have a special offer for podcast listeners, 12 weeks for £12, or €12 in Europe. Just go to newstatesman.com/podcast offer. And you can read all our international coverage at newstatesman.com/international.
From the New Statesman comes a new podcast, Audio Long Reads. The best of our reported features and essays read aloud.
Songs are like tattoos, Mitchell said on Blue. Having one written about you is immortality and fiction rolled into one.
Featuring writing from our authors, including Kate Mossman on Joni Mitchell's former muse and lover, Jeremy Cliff on his journey through France before this year's presidential election, and Sophie McBain on the refugee crisis.
Don't die, he kept shouting. He didn't answer when Mardwa screamed back, Who is dying?
Ease into the weekend with our Audio Long Reads, published every Saturday morning. Just search Audio Long Reads wherever you get your podcasts.
Hold up. Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Have a bit of a left field question, or I guess a right field question, with this being Le Pen's third time running for president and not failing, and Zemmour being, you know, still very vocal. Are we going to see a kind of power struggle to be who will be, you know, the face of the far right in the future?
Undoubtedly, yeah. And more broadly, I think we'll see a realignment across politics. So the socialists and the Republicans, the two traditional parties of power, polled below 7% in the first round together. So on a national level, they're all but obliterated. But they retain much higher representation than that in parliament and on a local level. So they still kind of, they still matter, at least for the time being, and whether and if they can win re-election, they still have leverage over a future government and over politics, not on a presidential level, but on a national level through the assembly, and also on a local level through the different levers of regional and local government. And I think there is clearly going to be some sort of realignment. People at the event I was at yesterday expect much of the Republican Party, the ones who are not favourable to the far right, to join Macron and to kind of become the right wing of his coalition formally, even though some of them have been so informally. And on the far right, clearly there will be some kind of political realignment. Marine Le Pen's supporters will say that she led the far right to its best result in history, while her detractors will say that even now, against the context of historic rejection of the incumbent and of her rival in the second round, she was still not able to win. And so clearly there will be a kind of power struggle between those different factions. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if there will be people on the right of the Republicans who will join the far right camp, and also on the left. This is now the second election in a row that the left has lost out on qualifying for the second round, because essentially it was just quite divided. Many will be asking whether they couldn't be more efficient if there was a kind of unified left bloc and a single left candidate and ahead of the legislative elections, which I'll be hoping to capitalize on to really push Macron to the left. There will be many voices in the communist party and and obviously France Unbowed in the Socialist Party calling for unity between the parties. And so clearly, yes, the political realignment that began in 2017 is, I think, coming to a head. But there's a real question as to how it's going to end up. We don't yet know what the political realignment that Macron began by just smashing up the traditional parties of power, what that will end up as.
Do you think there will be kind of a rallying or a sense of a momentum on the left? Because as we noted last time, Mélenchon came, Le Pen just squeaked by him to make into the second round. I mean, he almost made it. And I think we would be having a very different conversation in the last 2 weeks. We would have been having lots of very different conversations had that happened. What are some things, I guess, that we should be looking out for to actually realize that Macron is really being true to his word, what he was saying last night, that he is going to make some, he's not planning a continuation project. He is going to make some concessions and reach out to the left. What are some kind of signs that he will be doing that?
So I'd say one indicator will be who he chooses for his government, whether he reaches out to figures currently of the left or historically of the left. I think his government has, as a general rule, leans to the right as a whole over his term. And if he is sincere about rebalancing that, he will pick ministers, a prime minister who are more clearly leaning to the left. One of the kind of big features of his first term, I think, incontrovertibly, was the fact that he pretty consistently lent to the right throughout, and there was a kind of fairly consistent rightward drift on economics and on many social issues. Whether he changes that will be one indicator. Another will be the parliamentary elections. So, as I've said, who he chooses for his allies. It seems that his hopes of a single block in support of the president may fail. And if that were the case, will he reach out to, for example, the Green Party or the Socialist Party? Or on the contrary, will he lean mostly on the Republicans and on his existing party? That will be another key indicator. But of course, it's up to him, but it also depends on how successful his opponents are, right? If the left does really well in the parliamentary elections, he'll have no choice but to be pushed left. And many left-wing voters will be thinking of that, and they'll be thinking, okay, well, I didn't get the result that I wanted, and I voted for Macron or didn't vote for Macron. I reluctantly voted for Macron or didn't vote for Macron at all, or indeed perhaps voted for Le Pen. And I'll be thinking of how to push the president in a direction that is more amenable to me. And so if the left theoretically does get a good showing in the parliamentary elections, then that would be one way to push him to the left and to hold him to his inter-round promises.
So we've covered France's reaction to the election, Paris's reaction. Obviously, Macron's win, the meaning of that extends far beyond France for the EU, for the West, for NATO. What kind of reaction have we seen in the last few hours from there?
I mean, I think the reaction across the world is of almost universal relief. Many people were looking to Viktor Orban's Hungary as a model for how a Le Pen-led France would function and what she'd do within the EU, how she would govern. But clearly, Hungary, a country of about 10 million people, you know, fairly marginal to international affairs, behaving in a more kind of isolationist way, rejecting international alliances, is clearly different to France, a member of the UN Security Council, a nuclear power, a medium-sized power, which really does matter within the EU and on the international stage. So there was almost universal relief at Macron's win. You know, the European Commission, Germany, several leaders of European countries, in fact, made an unprecedented intervention into French politics a few days before, including Olaf Scholz, the German Chancellor, urging French voters to choose Macron, so because of the dangers, they said, of a Le Pen presidency. So clearly, there was a lot of relief. I think the only people who will really be disappointed will be obviously Putin, because Le Pen's instincts and her foreign policy would clearly have tilted France towards Russia and would have made France opposed to some of the, for example, some of the EU sanctions and some of the measures that Europe and France were taking against Russia, particularly in response to the war in Ukraine. And possibly Viktor Orban, whose general style of politics and the approach that he has pioneered and led very successfully in Hungary have been shown a setback. I mean, Le Pen is pretty closely aligned to Orban. She has visited him. She's spoken of him as an inspiration. And Macron is in many ways the complete opposite. And the fact that she came relatively close to winning, but in the end didn't, I think will come as a disappointment to Orban, who still has very few allies within the EU and certainly none from a member state as powerful as France. Thanks for following France Elects over this campaign. We'll be keeping an eye on politics in France and bringing back special episodes to cover big developments. But in the meantime, thanks for listening. I'm Ido Vok, and our producer has been Adrian Bradley.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.